welcome to another edition
Love
of
Hope Women's Radio.
And welcome to another edition of Woman is Views. We're going to jump right into it today. With no further ado, we do have our guest on the line. And our guest is Robin McGee, author of Hungry for More, a Keeping It Real Guide for Black Women and Weight and Body Image. She's actually joining us today to discuss her latest book, Dear Nana, Grandmother, Tales of Love, Secret, and Going Home, which continues exploring the enduring power of family, which is a theme that she often writes about. And Robin is currently teaching Women's Studies and Humanities at El Camino College and Compton Center in California. Let's welcome Robin.
Hi, Reese.
Hello.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. Yes.
Hi, Reese. How are you doing? Good
Hi.
To hear you.
Good to hear you. Good to have you on the show. And like I said, we're just going to jump right into it because we have so much to cover. And I know we can announce it now for those who would want to call in, or we can also do it offline as well. But Robin okay. is generous enough to be putting out a giveaway for today, which will be a copy of her this great autobiography. So if you do want to call in at any time during the show, we will go ahead and pull you in. If you do just have a general question, you can call for that as well. Our call-in number here is 213-943-3434. So, Robin, let's just jump right into this anthology. Can you let us know a little bit about the inspiration that made you go ahead and pick up this topic?
Yeah, well, thank you for having me, Reese. You know, I was inspired by just what I see around me, the love and dedication and devotion that many people have for their grandmothers. And I thought, wow, wouldn't it be great if we just put it all together, all the different stories from all over the world, different cultures and different age groups, and people talking about their grandmas. And so that's what I did. It's been a 2-year journey, and it's just been fantastic. It's been unbelievable.
Wonderful, wonderful. And can you kind of give us a little feel for this, like where were some of these submissions and some of these authors that decided to contribute, if you can give us a little bit of around-the-world feel from the countries that you did receive submissions from?
Yeah, I put a call out on a couple of the writers' websites that writers go to regularly. So, you know, I got a ton of responses. They're all very good. You know, we picked the very best of the best, over 3 dozen. We've got a writer from India, Malaysia, Gracie, with your Caribbean background as well. You know, my particular story, I had 2 grandmothers. I didn't know them really well. I loved them both dearly. I didn't know them really well. So my particular story isn't in this volume, but I hope to have it in the future. We have a woman from Cuba who talked about her grandma and how special it was for them every Christmas to put together a nativity scene, and that how, you know, after her grandma passed, you know, how she felt just empty and she wanted to keep up that tradition. So many of the stories that I'm telling or the authors have told are about keeping up traditions, about family history. It's about just that love, unbreakable love that we have for our grandmas.
Wonderful. And as a writer, why did you like to explore this topic of looking at family dynamics in your work?
You know, I just really think that family is the basis for everything, for everyone, and who we are comes from our families. Even people that we don't know in our families really shape who we become as adults and as people in this world. So my first book, as you mentioned, Hungry for More, was a story about my sister's journey, my sister Kathy's journey, and what happened to her and, you know, issues of weight and body image among black women, which turned out to be Kathy's story, but also universally true for many African-American women. So I just really believe that without family support and background and knowledge of who our family is, we're kind of at a disadvantage. So we really do need that. I love the idea of, you know, researching ancestors and, you know, getting to know where we really originated from. I just love that whole idea. So that's what I tend to concentrate on, family.
Wonderful. Well, let's just bring it back to the personal really quickly, because earlier you mentioned that you weren't you had these 2 great grandmothers in your life, but you weren't didn't know them as well as you would have liked to. But do you have any fondest memories of them that may still stand out in your mind, and do you wonder why those memories stand out?
Okay, so my grandmother on my mother's side, Estelle, she was Panamanian. My mother is born in Costa Rica, raised in Panama. So I didn't know her that well. We didn't see her a lot. She she lived in New York and we lived in California, but, you know, her presence could be felt from the menus my mother cooked, the food that she cooked, her wonderful bakes and codfish and plantains, you know, so it was always there. It was always part of my family. My father's mother, I knew a little bit better. She lived in Sacramento along with my many, many cousins. And I just remember us driving from Southern California to Northern California to visit her and just being so excited just the fact that I was going to see her and, you know, smell her. And it seemed like I could smell her biscuits, you know, down the street before we even got to her house good. Mm-hmm. And then when we did get there, you know, there's seven of us, I have six siblings and my parents. She just hugged me and just, oh, the warmth of her bosom and just kissed me and just knew me. And it was just wonderful. I'll never forget it. We call her Momo.
You just made me think of what's interesting is how we kind of tie our memories to all these, you know, the sensations that we feel around us, and smell and taste is a great one. A lot of times when you tell people to think back to memories of a certain loved one in their life, it's a smell, an aroma, it's a taste. So mm-hmm. I'm glad you picked up on that. Because those are things that we can actually carry on. Like you said, and what your mother did with the meals that she created, that was actually a representation of your mother being carried forward and bringing you closer to her.
Yeah, I always believe food brings people together. Recipes. I think every family has, you know, a recipe or two that they cook, and just the way that they cook it, I mean, it's like unique to their own family. So that's my thing. Food brings people together across cultures, across, you know, anything. If you like food and can get together and bake bread, well, you've made a friend.
Mm-hmm. So we know it for I would say throughout the African diaspora, this may be truthful about our grandmothers, I think, are probably one of the most prominent people or prominent hold the most prominent roles in our family in America, North America. We talk about Madre, Big Mama, and then, of course, in the Caribbean, mm-hmm. there's different ways that we describe these women. And, you know, so, but in this book, you have got these submissions from all around the world. Do you see a common theme in the position that the grandmothers play in within a family unit?
Yeah, yes, I do. Particularly the story that stands in my mind is called Legacy of Sadness and Strength. And the writer is from India. And she was describing the custom of grandmothers, of her grandmother, and many women in India, that they take over the household at a very early age, like 14, 15 years old. They're married, and they're responsible to take care of their own family as well as their in-laws and many, many others, cook every day, clean every day. And it's just that strength of will and tradition that carries forth. I don't know that we have anything quite like that in this country, but we do have the kind of elevation of our grandmothers in this country, how she's put on in a kind of a special place. Also, I have a story from a gentleman, a doctor. He wrote a story about his grandmother who lived through Nazi Germany and how mm-hmm. he didn't really realize, it's called Tattooed, by Dr. Surratt, Los Angeles area doctor, didn't really realize growing up that there was something special about his grandma. And as he, you know, got older and was able to figure out the world a little bit, he was able to make sense of the numbers that she had on her arm, which were tattoos from the camp, from Auschwitz. So, you know, he shared that story, and it was me one of the most moving because For years, he never knew what the tattoo on her arm really meant. That was just his grandma who hugged him and took care of him when people teased him and called him names, but he'd always noticed the tattoo. And so when he found out what it was, you know, obviously extremely bittersweet to know, you know, that his grandmother had suffered, but still was a loving person. So maybe that's a common theme, you know. We don't really know our grandmothers per se as people. We know them as our grandmother. We know them as blood and kin and relatives. But who are they really as women? And I think that kind of offered us some insight to long before they became grandmothers, you know, they had a life.
Very true. I think I sit back and look at pictures or try to find the pictures of my own grandmother when she was younger. I ask my mother questions. And because I want to kind of know who was that person, as you stated, before she became this archetype in a family or something that we, you know, looked up to it all the time. I'm sure that, you know, we have to humanize them at times, I believe, in that
yes.
respect. And
exactly.
But I think it goes back to what you just shared about the story about this person not knowing his grandmother's background and not knowing what the markings on her that she had at that one point in time. And I think it has a lot to do with that sometimes these stories or our grandmothers, there's some things that they don't want to pass along or state.
Yes.
I think you kind of
exactly.
find them out when you're delving in. Did you get a sense of that in the contributions from the authors as well, that there's this unwillingness to pass along some information to us?
Well, yeah, exactly right. In Dear Nana, that's the name of the collection, Dear Nana, I had at least one writer who we wanted to have in the anthology, but as we got closer to publication, she backed out. She said she talked to her family, and her family members said they didn't want her grandmother's story out there like that. So, you know, of course, I respected her wishes, but then it made me feel even like, gosh, I've got a special responsibility because these women are elevated in many, many people's eyes. I mean, they're the grandmother. So I really felt like I had to do an extra good job as an editor, make sure everything was spelled correctly, make sure everything was perfect the way that the author wanted it to be. Because I feel like I'm representing them and their families. So that was a lesson. That was really a lesson. I wasn't expecting that part of it. As I said, my particular story isn't in this volume, but I'm acting as editor. And so that's a whole different role for me as a writer, as an author. I enjoyed it immensely, but, you know, it comes with a special responsibility because there's 40 writers in Dear Nana, 40 stories, and each of them unique and individual and, you know, from a different perspective. So I just feel very blessed and honored that they, you know, they privileged me to tell the stories.
Wow, this is a volume that I'm excited about getting a copy of myself and reading and just looking for these common themes and just seeing how, you know, if in a way, I will say, how do we actually make sense of the fact that a lot of times we talk about we live in these patriarchal societies and cultures, but yet the person who still retains the most strength or the most dominance in these families happen to be the grandmothers again. So how do we put that together? It's a very interesting way to look at it from this perspective of, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it is. No, it's a paradox. And I always just think that, you know, even in these patriarchal societies, you know, the patriarchs have mothers along the way, and they, you know, they love their mothers and they have grandmothers and so forth that maybe are in roles, these women are in roles that we don't quite see as being, you know, held up as it should be. But everybody has a love, I believe, for the grandmother or a mother or that figure, right? That figure, that life figure. I believe even in the hardest heart, you know, there's a light there for a mother or a grandmother. Now, does that mean that they're willing to share power and you know, wealth? And no, of course, that doesn't mean that. But on a very personal level, on a deep level, on a human level, I believe that everybody has that need, that longing to know, you know, who gives life, the person that gave life and, you know, continues to give life. Maybe it's kind of a naive point of view, but that's how I see it.
So I'd like to remind those again who may be listening on the line, or if you're listening online, you can feel free to go ahead and call in on your phone to get yourself a copy of Dear Nana, this grandmother's tales of love to continue going home as we continue to discuss this book and delve into it a bit more. You can give us a call here at 347-945-5922. Let's just jump back into this again. Robin, could you describe some of the book chapters or sub-themes so we can kind of get a full feel for the book?
Oh, yes. Okay, so, of course, your story, the name of your story, Reese's Gracie, that was one of the ones that moved me the most, the story of your grandmother and, you know, the life that she lived and some of the choices that she made that, you know, especially I think is in this day and age, I think a lot of people really need to read and absorb that. That's, of course, one of my favorites. The first story that I put in the book is called Epistle for Nan. And it talks about the gentleman writing it, African-American gentleman, talking about how the person he knew as his grandmother was actually not blood-related because she adopted his mother. And so, but he loved her dearly. He worshipped her, Nan. And as I came to find out, you know, she gets sick. That's kind of one of the themes that run through these stories, too, Reese, is, you know, our grandmothers leave us too soon. That's the only fault that I can see that they have is they leave too soon. So his grandmother eventually passed away, and he was so distraught that he went to her gravesite the day before the burial, and he climbed into her actual gravesite and just lay there looking at the stars, you know, trying to keep that connection. But I was kind of surprised. There were a number of people who told me that after the grandmothers died, they actually communicated with her after she was dead. Now, you know, that was, I had to, of course, you know, ask, are you sure, There's another story called Grandma Martha, where she describes a scene that after her grandmother had died, she meets with her grandmother again, she sees her again, and her grandmother gives her some chocolate. I don't know what that's about. I can't quite figure that out. I don't know if that's, you know, a childish imagination, or is that, you know, I believe in otherworldly, you know, matter. So what is that? But at least four writers described seeing their grandmother after she had already passed away.
That is an interesting theme that I have. having that, I think it speaks again to the strong connections that people do have with their grandmothers. To have that feeling of having her in a room or having her still speaking to you in that way. And that's interesting that you have it where more than one of the authors who submitted or talked about it has the similar story.
Yes, people that didn't know each other. None of these authors know each other. They've never met each other. Now, that's kind of the exciting part, too. I'm having a book launch here in Long Beach, California on September 12th. And I'm so glad and happy and excited to meet some of the authors that contributed to Dear Nana, at least four. I've met you, of course. You'll be there. Hopefully, we hope to see you there. But I'll get to meet some people from, you know, across the country that I've never met. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Wonderful. Can you share the time and date of the gathering and book launch again?
It's September 12th. That's a Sunday at 3 p.m., the location, it's a bookstore, really a wonderful bookstore, independent bookstore called Gatsby Books in Long Beach. And it's from 3 to 5 in the afternoon. And we'll have readings and, you know, we'll have books for sale, of course, and some wine and discussion and conversation and everybody talking about family, because that's what it's really about. It's about the power of family. So September 12th, I hope to see everybody there. It's free, of course, no admission. You know, and there'll be at least four of the contributors reading parts of their stories. So it's very exciting. I'm very excited about that.
Wonderful. What we did not mention is, could you share how those listening can get their own copy of Dear Nana? Where is the book currently available?
Yes, they can special order if they go into Barnes & Noble or any brick-and-mortar bookstore. They'll special order it for you. Amazon.com, of course, has print copies as well as e-books of Dear Nana. So those are definitely available now. I'm not sure what they're being priced at, but affordable, of course. And, you know, I urge you to pick it up. I think that everybody will find something in one of the stories that they can relate to and cherish and bring back memories for. And that's really why we collected these stories, for you to kind of look at your own life and your own relatives and grandma and just, you know, see a commonality. And then I encourage anybody else that has stories about their grandmother, I'd love to do a second volume. You know, send them on to me. Send them to my email, staycom09@gmail.com, staycom09@gmail. I'd love to read it and talk about it and hopefully put together another volume. And I know that,
that
also, too. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead and finish that thought before we
So I was just thinking, it was kind of bringing to mind, you know, some of the things that have been happening in the world, you know, recently. And I know that, you know, we talked about before the women who were, you know, killed in South Carolina. Has it been even a month ago? Just slaughtered. I think at least one of them was a grandmother. And I know from the news reports that she shielded her grandchild. Her life was taken as she was protecting her own grandchild. So, of course, that brought up a lot of stuff for me in terms of my book, you know, just the power and that love, that tremendous love of a grandmother that she would, you know, give her own life for her grandchild. Unexpectedly, out of the blue, nobody, you know, she did nothing wrong to have her life just snuffed out like that. And, you know, I believe there might have been another grandmother, but for sure I recall this one woman. I'm sorry, I don't know her name. That they did say, you know, she died protecting her grandchild.
Yes, that is correct. I believe there was
two or three grandmothers, particularly that day, whose lives were taken in such a horrible way. Again, these are the women who were murdered inside the Emmanuel African Methodist Church in Charleston, South Carolina, is what we're going over. And I think one of the people put it in great words, which really connected me again to the anthology Dear Nana, as soon as I heard it, was on the writer and blogger Son of Baldwin, when he stated that the part that I can escape, the part that haunts me and will haunt me until my dying day, is that he killed the grandmothers. Can you fathom this? Somebody killing the grandmothers. And he's like, the grandmothers are the sacred holders of wisdom, the gentle matriarch of discipline, the hands and bombs and the healing, the fair judges, the joke tellers, the story givers. And he just kept going into all these things our grandmothers are, the intuitive scientists, the songstress that sings you asleep at night, the seamstress that, you know, puts you together in the day. So I think his sentiments were so great in that he just kind of brought together the whole, wrapped around exactly what our grandmothers mean to us and how unfathomable that something like this could happen to them. Could you elaborate or even continue agreeing with this sentiment that he put forth? Do you think that's did the media miss that in their reporting of this story?
I never heard them specifically mention that, missed up. They missed up all the time, but that angle of the story, I never really heard that mentioned the way that you've just elicited. It's heartbreaking just to even think of it, that here were women at a Bible study, faithfully and praying and learning and teaching one another, and this monster comes from out of nowhere and sits among them for what they said, an hour, these women and men too, and just slaughters them for no reason. It's like a scene from a Edgar Allan Poe horror story, that this would actually happen. And of course, so now that bond's broken for good, because the women there, their children and grandchildren, the great grandchildren or whomever, will never know these women at all, ever. They'll only know memories and, quite frankly, a tragedy. So, of course, the killer was not thinking about that, didn't care about that. But you know what? He can't snuff out the love that those women, the love that we all have. I mean, I even feel like I love him. I've never met him, but he can't destroy that. That will never be destroyed. And they'll always be honored for their bravery.
Yes, yes. So what would you say to someone who would inquire in, why is it so important that we find ways like this, ways like compiling our story, or thinking about our grandmothers, or even going to try to find out more about who they are? Why is it so important that we actually honor our grandmothers, our foremothers in this way? What are we benefiting from doing this?
Well, it's longevity. It's a cord that runs through your life. I mean, everybody, and I believe I quote the anthropologist Margaret Mead in my book, and Dear Nana, to say that no human is complete unless they know their grandmother. That was her, this great anthropologist. That was what she felt, that humans are not complete unless they know that woman. We know our parents for the most part, most of us do, but where did they come from? And oftentimes our parents are so different from our grandparents, right? Our grandparents are a little bit more lenient with certain things and more understanding, and we can do no wrong in their eyes often, where our parents are the disciplinarians. And, I have friends now. I'm not blessed to be a grandmother yet. I hope to be. Many of my friends are grandmothers themselves, and they say how it's nice to enjoy their grandkids and then give them back when they're done. That's the beauty of being a grandmother. So, it's just that being one removed from your own children. Yeah, it's fantastic.
That sounds a little bit like being an aunt. That's my joy at the moment. When it becomes too much, you start figuring out where their parent went.
The secrets is in the title of Dear Nana, too, because in the many stories, there's, secrets that are being shared between grandmother and grandchild, things that perhaps the parents don't even know. And just that confidant, you have a confidant in grandma. She's not going to tell your secrets. And she doesn't judge you. And I don't think really I've ever met a bad grandmother. I say that to people, and they kind of look at me. I said, I never really met someone that was just straight up a terrible person that called herself a grandmother.
So
So that's
so true. And I think
point.
That grandmothers do, a lot of times, especially these days, they step in there when the parents are unable. A lot of times I come across families that I work with or anything of that sort where the grandmother is the only sole guardian. I think that they have to raise their children, and they're doing it again, and they're doing it willingly. They're doing it with a smile on their face. And I think it goes back to what you're saying, is that connection and thread. I think they're securing their own legacy when they take care of their own grandchildren.
Yes. It's kind of a shame in a way that, you know, here's a woman, maybe she's in her 40s or 50s or 60s, 70s or 80s. You know, who's done her child rearing, and then through circumstance, is put in that position again. And it's not easy. Like you said, they do it with a smile on their face, cheerfully, joyfully, but it's not an easy task.
Indeed, indeed. I'm very much excited about this work. Volume 2 sounds interesting, and I haven't got into Volume 1, but I can just imagine that. How did you go about with your selection criteria to decide what's making the cut for Volume 1?
Well, I made it clear to the writers, like I mentioned before, I had gone to a couple of writers' websites, and I wanted true stories. That's why when I got the stories about people speaking to their grandmother after her death, you know, I really had to question those, you know, many times.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted true stories. I wanted stories where, you know, a lesson. What did you learn from this? A beginning, a middle, and an end, you know, a true story. And, you know, make it lively, make it interesting to read, and make the reader just want more and more and more from your stories. And, you know, spell things correctly. I mean, let's get down to basics. Let's have everything spelled right and grammar. Many of the writers, I would say at least half of them are professional writers. They've written other things, so they weren't novices. But I do have a few novices that did a very good job as well.
So that is good to know for those listening who may be interested in getting in there for Volume 2 and sharing the story about your grandmother. I know people may be sitting back thinking, my grandmother's this and great and she's done this. And that will be your opportunity to, again, contact Robin. Make sure you get out this Volume 2. If you're in the area, come on down to the book signing. Let her know about this great woman that you had in your life and get her story out there in that way. And
I'd love to read more.
I know you stated that there were some people who just didn't want their story out there. Their mother was too personal, or their grandmother.
Yeah.
Do they have the opportunity to publish anonymously or remove names to protect the innocent type of...
absolutely. You know, had she asked me if she could use a pseudonym or, you know, a nom de plume, for sure, I would have, you know, invited her to do that because her story was quite compelling. But I think that, you know, once you get – that's the funny thing about being a writer and writing about your family. You're not just writing for you. You're writing for all your family members. So I think that when she sent me the story, she was just writing a story. But then when she started talking to family members, they, you know, had a different idea and they didn't want it out there and she felt a little pressure. So, you know, I didn't want her to feel any worse than she already did. So I said, you know, good luck and thank you for submitting.
Thank you. And I noticed that I had two calls that I was trying to pick up, but for those who were calling, if you want to try again, these last few minutes, you can try again. I'm not sure why you did not connect with us there, but we'll try to pick up again. Or if not, maybe Robin will extend the giveaway and we can work this out online for those who have tuned in and don't want to do that. That would be wonderful because I am not sure why these calls have dropped. You never know when we're doing things like this live in this way, but I don't call us that. Hey, send us a message. Woman, if you let us know that you are the caller or one of the callers that tried, and we will quickly connect you with Robin and get you that copy of this great book. Again, the title is Dear Nana, Grandmother Tales of Love, Secrets, and Going Home. We would definitely like to thank our guest today. It's Robin McGee. And once again, let them know where they can pick up a copy of your book. I think you said Amazon, and there's a few other places you mentioned.
Yeah, Amazon.com, and then any local bookstore you can go in and special order. I think my publishers told me it takes maybe a week, 10 days, maybe 2 weeks if you go into a bookstore and special order it, but it's definitely available. We've got pretty good distribution. I'm happy about that. So, and then Amazon.com, a print copy is available as well as an ebook. So, you know, if you like to read your stuff on your Nook or Kindle or anything like that, it's available in that format as well. So, yeah, and then in our book signing, again, September 12th at 3 p.m. at Gatsby Books in Long Beach.
Wonderful. Thank you again.
Sure. I'm sorry.
No, go right ahead.
I just wanted to give a shout-out to my women's studies class at El Camino Compton Center. I told them that I was going to be on their radio show, and they're very excited about it. So I want to give a shout-out to all of them. I'm learning from them as much as they're learning from me.
Wonderful. Thank you again for joining us today, Robin McGee.
Thank you for having me.